Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
I just needed a second opinion. A second opinion.
Boy, that's bad. I don't need to be anybody's second opinion.
So you've had the cocoa.
I think so.
Yeah.
For sure. I didn't test for it, but I think I have. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're still not back.
I could play if there was a game today, but I'm probably not 100%.
Not much defense, just shoot the ball.
Well, that was,
that's how you always play it.
Even when I was 100%, that was the way it was.
How much do you miss playing basketball?
Which part?
Any of it. Because, I mean, you played a ton of basketball in your days.
I did.
And you, I think you said not long ago that, you know, that's not part of what you do anymore.
No. I think it depends on which part you're talking about.
Okay. Well, tell me the parts.
Well, you tell me which part you want to know about.
Well, I just think the game itself. Being out there playing.
Like playing? No, I don't miss playing at all.
Okay. Okay.
No, not. I mean, no, not any.
You don't miss the competition, all that jazz?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Okay.
I am, in fact, I don't know what's happened, but my competitiveness is almost zero.
Yeah.
So much so that my guys that I play golf with, they roll their eyes when I'm on their team in the team game. And we walked in the other night. There was like, a couple of weeks ago, there was like 20 guys playing for a little money game. You know, not big money at all. But somebody said, hey, what'd you guys, you know, what'd your group shoot? And the one guy goes, Pierce won't know. I said, I resent that. I don't know. So
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Okay.
My competitiveness is pretty low. Yeah. I miss the camaraderie.
Yeah.
I miss being able to do some of those things physically. That's what I was asking. I miss, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, the narcissistic form is playing in front of people, you know.
I need them to see me.
Yeah, but a rec league, summer league night, get, you know, after dinner, getting my stuff ready and going to the gym. No. Yeah.
No desire.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. All right.
I tried it a few years ago, early 50s, with some guys that I knew. All of them played college basketball. Some of them played after that. They play in the Senior Olympics, which is a 3-on-3 deal. And these guys had made it. There's some of them had made it to the finals.
Golly.
So they could all still play.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine had been trying to get me out there. And so I did it one night. And I thought, a few minutes in, I thought, oh, this is kind of fun again. And then I thought, oh, my gosh, I can't. It's like learning something all new. Like, I can't do any of the things
I used to do.
Right. And it was just weird. Like, this is, and the next day, I had to go to PT for a while.
Did you get straightened back up?
I'm like, no, I'm done. I'm out. What was I even thinking? I had to borrow some shoes from Will, basketball shoes. I didn't even have any left.
It's funny.
Stupid.
It is funny how your body changes. You know, Jonathan helped me. By help me, I mean, he did like 97% of it, but he helped me cut down a tree in our backyard 2 or 3 weekends ago. We had a tree that just, you know, decayed, so we had to tear it down. And I'm watching him, you know, climbing up there, holding a chainsaw, cutting these branches off. And I'm looking, I'm going, I can still get up my tree and move around. So he ran inside to go to the restroom or so. I don't know what happened, but he disappeared. So I didn't take the chainsaw with me. I was smart enough not to do that, but I thought, I'm going to climb this tree. I maybe got 5 feet off the ground, and I thought, things don't stretch the way they used to stretch. I can't pull myself the way I used to pull myself. I just laughing, thinking.
With a ladder, you were climbing the tree?
Just climbing the tree, literally. Yeah. I was impressed I got up in it, to be honest, without a ladder.
How far up did you get?
Like I say, 6 feet, maybe 5-6 feet. Not far. Yeah. I got to the place where you just had to really stretch long to get to the next.
You had to think about it.
Branch, and I thought, no, there's no reason for me to do this. My son's here.
Yeah,
he's a little monkey going up and down it. You know,
yeah, he'll shimmy up there just fine.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh gosh, yeah. Things don't. Yeah. What did we say last week? We weren't going to talk about our ailments and how things
are.
I was about to say, man.
Well, they start with basketball. How do we get there so quick?
I know. No, it's a great game. It was a big part of my life.
Yeah.
And I look back fondly on that, but I do not miss.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for feedback today. As we were talking earlier on skillets, it's so funny. I've been looking for the perfect skillet, and you asked me just a great question, like, what do you need it for? And I thought, oh, I don't know. I think I like them to look pretty. So I just am grateful for your thoughts on that.
I can see inside your brain, the skillet, and then just the bomb explodes. There's all these things, and you, I don't know anybody else like this, so I'm not inferring that somebody else would be this way, but the like the bomb, the, you know, the brain explosion. I'm just going to buy all these skillets. I'm going to try them. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And so I think.
Well, literally driving over here this morning, I thought, you know, we should do 4 or 5 episodes on our podcast here, and we could talk about different skillets and come up with our best favorite skillets. And I thought, I have no desire to spend that much money on skillets. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm looking for.
I think even more than that, I don't think anybody wants to listen to that.
Oh, I think you're 100% right. Yeah. But I would today, only because I'm in the market.
We'll talk about that.
Only in the market today.
And so what happened?
Oh, I don't know. You looked at it. You didn't like it. I didn't like it either. So you confirmed my prejudice. So I'm going to return them back to dear old Amazon. And okay. I'm probably just going to go with those simple non-sticks for when I need non-stick. And I got more cast iron than I know what to do with anyway. So I'm just going to use my cast iron for everything else. Okay. I love how it cooks anyway. It's even.
Right.
Mine's seasoned pretty well. It's not non-stick. There's one of them that's pretty darn close to non-stick. I've got it seasoned so dialed in, you know?
Yeah.
That's a challenge, getting cast iron exactly where you want it, I think.
Man, it is a challenge.
Yeah.
I have one that's perfect.
Yeah.
And then I bought one a few years ago. I was so excited. It's a kind of a, it's not a Dutch oven, but it's almost the size of a Dutch oven with a handle.
Huh.
And okay. I think it was pre-seasoned, but I just never got it right. Mm. And it's almost like you can't undo it.
Yeah. That's what it feels like. They say you can.
And you start over again. And so I love the pan, but I just, you know, sometimes it's got that, I don't know, just too, is this roughness that I don't love. So that's kind of bumps me out.
Yeah. Now I've got, I think 2 or 3 that are like 10, 12 inch ones. And one of them is dialed in so perfect. The other two are okay. But then I've got a couple smaller ones that I'm just like, I don't know if I'll ever use them again, but I can't, you know, I'll every now and then go, I'm going to season them. And I'll do 4 seasons, you know, on a Saturday when I'm just around. I don't think it changes a thing. It's supposed to, but I just don't get it there sometimes.
Yeah, it's tough. They're tough to get there.
Yeah. Well, it's a birthday week.
Oh.
Yeah.
Your birthday?
Nope. Oh. Saturday Night Live turns 50 this week.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I saw an article last night, and I was thinking back on that going, golly, I meant to look, and I didn't. I don't remember who the earliest people were, but I remember getting into Saturday Night Live. I felt like pretty early on, so it would have started, what, I guess in 75. And so
Tennessee and Arkansas math right there. Yeah, we're in 25, 50 years.
Yeah, and but I had to pause to make sure.
Yeah, you did. I saw the pause. Yeah.
Speaking of Tennessee, Arkansas, it's also Tennessee, Arkansas football weekend.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be when this comes out, but it is when we're sitting here talking.
It is.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, they say Tennessee by 12.5, but they've said that before, and we've gone into Fayetteville and lost, so anything can happen in that game. That's what I've learned.
I don't know. I don't know that anything can happen.
Well, but you got your old motorcycle riding coach back.
We do have Bobby back. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great coach, but an amazing story.
Something about that I really like, which, I don't know, speaks a lot to me, but no, I don't. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of out on, you know, I'm such a fair weather fan.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they've broken my heart so many times.
Yeah.
I really do, though. I don't know what's happened, but I think we talked about this. I can't sit and watch a whole game of anything, really, anymore.
Yeah.
So, my daughter's in town. She's going up for the game. I've got a bunch of friends, Tennessee friends, going up. I mean, you should. If you're a Tennessee fan, this would be the game you'd want to go to.
Yeah.
Because I don't expect a lot of opposition with all the turmoil there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, Petrino has had at least an open week, bye week last weekend. So he's had 2 straight weeks. What can you do in 2 weeks? I don't know, but he's also a mastermind. It'll be interesting to see.
No question on the offensive side. He is he's a guru.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember his first stint at Arkansas and was watching with some buddies of mine that played football in college and some guys that were dialed into the program. And I mean, we didn't have anybody. It's like you and me out there running routes.
Yeah.
The guys were running wide open.
Yep.
And so, you know, the guy can – he is an unbelievable play designer and play caller. But I just think there's – I think there's too much damage that's been done to undo. And
takes time to rebuild that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you got to look at – I was having this conversation with a Tennessee friend of mine last night. I think you have to look at what Tennessee did and, you know, a couple of busts in hires. A
couple, I think it was 17.
No, it wasn't 17.
It felt like it.
Yeah. It was, and then, you know, you get a good guy with some pedigree and that's built a program at a smaller school.
Yeah.
And one of my Tennessee buddies said, but Tennessee was a premier program. You know, and I said, man, I think that's part of the problem. It's most schools think you're a premier program, but if you're not in that top 7 or 8, you know, you're probably not.
Yeah.
And you got to you got to think rebuild
mm-hmm.
rather than I am something I'm not.
Right.
You know, it's like,
right. Well, that's what it felt like,
you know,
happened
what I mean?
There. Well, I think that's what happened almost for a decade, is even the people they would hire were trying to live off the quote unquote legacy, which I'm not sure is as big as everybody wants to make it to be. You know, and I don't know, just the product that was turned out was just horrible. But it has been fun watching a guy like Heupel come in and do some things for Tennessee football to at least be in the conversations right now. You know, it's been fun the last few years. Yeah,
he really has. Yeah. And so I think if you're not in that, you know, those schools that can turn it around in 1 year because of recruiting,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if you're not in that, I think that's probably 7 or 8 schools. If you're not in that, you've got to have a guy that's, you give him some time,
yep.
that's young, got some energy.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that's what Arkansas has to do.
Yeah.
Is find that guy.
Yeah.
And I think the checkbooks will start to open back up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you have to have these days.
Well, there's big checkbooks in Fayetteville. Bentonville, maybe.
They've got some.
Between Chicken and Walmart.
They've got some resources.
You know? Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, back to
so that's our life. College football segment.
Yeah. That's everything we know right there.
That's good, yeah.
Saturday Night Live. Were you ever a Saturday Night Live fan? Were you ever one of those guys that would actually watch it?
No,
really,
not really.
Okay, yeah, I got into it in those early years for some reason.
Some parts were that may not. That's probably not fair to say. I did watch some, and there were some people that I thought were funny.
Yeah,
but I didn't look forward to it like I did other comedy things.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I bet I've not watched it in 20 years. Maybe just picked it up. Just once in a blue moon, but yeah.
Right.
But there was a season back. I mean, this is the old, old days. You know, the Dan Aykroyd, the Belushi brothers, Gilda Radner, you know, all of Chevy Chase. I mean,
yeah.
the people that came out of there from those first years are incredible.
So Eddie Murphy. Who?
I know. It really is. It really is. But anyway, it was funny when I saw that. I thought, 50 years of Saturday Night Live, you know.
They had a 50-year special not long ago.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I mean, literally, that's how much I'm dialed into it. Not at all anymore. But it was just cool reading that and thinking about
what were you doing in 1975?
Well, probably very similar to what I'll be doing this Saturday night. That's a teaser. I'll come back to it in a minute. 75, I was what would I have been? I would have been my sophomore year of high school. Because I graduated in 77, so right? So 75 would have been sophomore year. Yep. Yeah, so sophomore, beginning my junior year. I'd given up on thinking that I was going to be able to play football. I was so thin. I was my height, but I think I weighed like 120. I mean, I was skin and bones. And so I'd quit football my sophomore year, and I decided, hey, I can hang around football team if I start taking pictures for the newspaper.
Hmm.
And so sideline photographer thing, you know, and then started writing. By then, my senior year, I was doing the sports editor, whatever that meant, a little high school newspaper. But it was fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how I stayed involved in sports, because I just realized I'm never going to play this game at any kind of level.
Because you didn't want to?
I would love to. I loved the game. But, man, I just remember freshman year, we didn't have a freshman team, so we played with all the seniors. You know, the difference in a freshman boy and a senior boy is about 17 years, I think. I mean, it's just like we had some big boys. And I just remember getting hit so hard in Oklahoma drills and things like that. And I just thought, I'm not made for this.
This is really painful.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny, though, just a side note, you and I have talked about this before. I don't know if we've talked about it on podcasts. When we were growing up,
yeah,
and you not only organized sports like in school, but at the playground,
mm-hmm.
there were no differentiators between age.
Mm-mm. None.
Coaches didn't think anything about putting a 15-year-old against an 18-year-old, or when you went to play pickup basketball, there was a 12-year-old playing against an 18-year-old. Nobody ever thought about it.
Never thought twice about it. Yeah.
Good and bad. And
yeah.
Not you know, yeah. just. And so I don't know what the point of that is. I just thought that was a part of our. Everything is so regulated today.
Yeah.
Not only you have to be the same age, but if you play football as a kid and you're a certain weight, then you can't play certain positions or you have to play other positions.
Well, I remember like the little Franklin Cowboys, the single stripers and the double stripers.
Yeah.
Remember?
We played 1 year and I had two guys trying to explain that to me while they were in tryouts. I'm like, what the hell are y'all talking about? I don't even know. They were adamant and very energetic about this.
Oh, I know.
Single, double, he's going to be a this. And I'm like, dude, I don't know. I just want to watch, you know.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it has.
Well, not back changed. In the day, though.
No. So the other thing in 75 that was probably going on, it was, you know, I guess in 75, I was getting ready to get my first car. I guess I got that in 76.
What was your hairstyle in 1975?
Well, I was just going to say, man, I went with the I went to longer hair, so you know it was over my ears, and it wasn't like full on mullet. It wasn't that long in the back, but it was long. My parents wouldn't let me go much below my collar, mom especially, but they let it come down and cover my ears.
Wow.
And I always had to think about my ears being these. In my mind, my ears were like, you know, elephant ears. So I wanted long hair to cover my ears up. So yeah, I had the long hair parted in the middle.
Oh yeah,
and it had a little bit of a wavy flow to it on the front.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't get a perm or anything. It just had a little bit of wavy flow to it. So yeah. I thought I was a bad mamma jamma. That's the 70s right there, too.
Wow, okay, yeah.
So I've been studying the 70s this week because my little just-turned-9-year-old granddaughter is having a birthday party on Saturday night. And the theme is it's going to be a disco party. And she was over the house a couple weeks ago, and they came in for the weekend, and she was getting dressed for church.
Was that her idea?
Mm-hmm. Oh, their family is amazing. You know, like Jessica and Josh both love music of all kinds. So she's singing Dancing Queen from
ABBA.
ABBA. Yeah. You know, oh my gosh. She's got a Cool in the Gang song that's kind of on repeat when she's walking around singing. So she's got the 70s stuff down right now.
Huge fan.
But she came downstairs all dressed up for church, had on a cute little dress, hair back. And she had on these little silver glitter go-go boots. And I said, Palmer, I love your boots. And she goes, Papa, they're for the disco party. And I thought, oh my gosh, she's going to be all glammed up. So I'll be doing the bump and all sorts of other things this Saturday night out at her birthday party as I'll relive 1975.
Out in Dixon.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
1975 in Dixon.
Everything about that is just funny.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, no kidding, like 2 nights ago, I just thought, okay, I hated the thoughts of having to dance in high school. Because, you know, first of all, it was a sin to dance in high school, I'm pretty sure, when the church that I raised in.
You have a lot of things going against you on that.
Everything going
against me. When the word dance comes into play.
I don't think I can do it. Yeah, I'm like 100% certain. I don't
mentally, physically,
everything.
Racially, there's a lot of things going on. East Tennessee.
Yeah. And so a couple nights ago, I pulled up the YouTube videos. I thought, okay, I'm going to watch some of these disco moves. And I'm dying laughing because I remember trying so hard to do those to get ready to go to homecoming dance. I don't know if he ever listens in, although I may text him and ask him to listen to this episode. But Andy Hyatt and I were buddies in high school. And I remember before homecoming, I think it was our junior year. So that would have been 75, I guess. Yeah. I remember going over to his house and him trying to show me how to dance to disco music. And I just remember, I think there's Mark might have been there. There's a third guy that was there too. But I just can think back on that and just laugh going, I was so desperate to try to fit in. But, you know, I just never have had moves when it comes to a dance floor. But we'll see what happens Saturday night.
It's interesting that you went over to Andy Hyatt's house to learn how to dance.
Well, it was East Tennessee. A lot
blind
of
leading
happened.
The blind feels like there. I don't know Andy, but that just feels like that's.
Wait, no, Andy had a couple sisters. So, see, he had an up on me, and they were older, so I think he had probably picked up something. And they may have even helped us out. I don't remember. It didn't last long because I remember thinking, why are we two guys trying to learn to dance? This doesn't feel right. Yeah. We didn't do slow dancing, at least, so you know. But back in the 70s, everything was okay.
We didn't really talk about those things.
No. Evidently not.
No, so.
Anyway, that's going to be fun. I think hanging out and watching my little granddaughter, little Palmer. Plus, it's funny, I was talking to Josh yesterday, her dad, and evidently the whole family's, you know, got costumes or outfits or whatever you want to call it, and they've got a lot of people from their church and from their neighborhood that are coming over. So it's going to be It'll be the social event of the season.
It's going to be a scene, man.
Disco and Dixon, baby. Come on.
It's going to be a scene.
I was reading another article a couple days ago, and I just found, I had just seen where Saturday Night Live turns 50, and I think it may be this weekend. I think it may have launched like October 10th, 11th, 12th, something like that. But anyway, this was just interesting to me because, you know, I've always been in the church world. I've always been curious watching churches. So Saturday Night Live started in October of 1975, obviously on a Saturday night, the first time it was ever on TV. And the next day, on the Sunday morning, in South Barrington, Illinois, a little church plant had their first service. And that church is called Willow Creek Community Church. And for a number of years is one of the biggest churches in America, yeah. and, you know, kind of this big, massive imprint. And it's had its ups and downs and highs and lows and scandals. I mean, like anything that's 50 years old, probably. But it's interesting because I started thinking about that, and I thought, here are these two movements, I don't know, for want of a better, two organizations, whatever you want to call them, that started same weekend, and they both have had a track record of a lot of controversy. You know, like Saturday Night Live was controversial from some of this comedy was not clean enough in the 70s, you know, and people are up in arms about it. And then Willow Creek was, you know, they were kind of one of the kings of the seeker-sensitive movement. Back in those days, it was just where they were trying to make church more appealing, you know, less hellfire and brimstone kind of deal. They would use, you know, bigger instruments. They would use drama skits, plays, movie clips. And man, you know, that caught all sorts of hell in the 70s and 80s as that church was coming on the scene. And I found myself thinking about that a little bit. And then this came to my mind. I thought, you know, there's been so much controversy around that place. And probably so much good too. Isn't that always true? That's both and about the word leadership. And I think coming in here today, that's what I was thinking. I thought I'd love to talk with you about, just kick around a minute about the concept of leadership and, you know, what the good, bad, and the ugly of leadership. And then is there a difference in leadership in the corporate world and leadership in the church? Hmm. And should there be? And I don't know. My brain was just racing yesterday as I was thinking about from Saturday Night Live to a church to leadership. That's my progression.
Well, no, I get it. When you look at Lorne Michaels, right, the founder of Saturday Night Live, I mean, you ask 100 cast members, you're going to get 100 different opinions.
Yeah.
Loved by some, hated by others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure whoever was the church, Willow Creek.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leadership's probably the same.
Yeah.
You know? It is an interesting concept. I think, too, if you have so a couple things come to mind. I'll spitball them.
You can say
what you think. I don't hear this as much anymore, but I used to hear it a lot coming out of the church world. It's not as prevalent, I don't think, in the business world. I think the business world is better at selecting leaders, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think my experience has been the baseline for them is not everybody can be a leader.
Mm.
I think sometimes in the church world, parachurch world, you hear a lot of, we're training leaders, we're building leaders. And my first thought is, well, who are they? Because mm-hmm. not everybody's made to be a leader,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You do have some responsibility and some sphere of influence, but mm-hmm. I think some people's sphere of influence and leadership, if those are synonymous, are small.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, everybody's not made to be a CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that. And I do think there is a difference in what it looks like corporately and what it could look like in the church. Although I think the two have converged quite a bit in my lifetime.
I think so. For sure.
That now, you know, the bigger the church, the more the leader really is a CEO.
People resent that, I think.
Well,
you hear a lot of people in the South. I say that. I mean, I can think of a dozen friends of mine mm-hmm. that do not like that they don't know the pastor of their church.
Right. Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, that's fine. But if you go to a church of 1,000 people or more, or 500 people or more, you're probably not going to know them.
Right. Right.
Maybe you don't want to know them.
Yeah. Well, there's a numbers game to it at some point.
Mm-hmm. Any other leadership, that would not be questioned. I worked for a company for a couple of years, and I never met the CEO.
Yeah.
I never would.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no chance I'd meet him, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So well, if you went to work at Google, Coca-Cola, I mean, Apple, fill in the blank.
You're not going to meet him.
More than likely, you're never going to. Right, right.
Yeah,
right,
so, right. You know. But yeah, I think they have converged.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I've thought about a lot in the last, I don't know, 20 years probably, is this phrase that maybe I've stolen from somebody, I just don't know who, but I've often thought, if I had the brain power, I'd love to write a book called The Idolatry of Leadership. Because I think in the church, what I've seen happen in my lifetime is that leadership has become the most important thing for a quote-unquote good, successful, even that word bothers me, church. You know, that leadership, everything rises and falls by leadership is one of the big quotes that one of the famous leadership gurus in Christianity talks about. Everything rises and falls by leadership. And I think Is that really true? And is that a good thing to be true? Like, I find myself scratching my head about that a lot. And I think some of it comes out of my own story, too, just watching how leadership created a sense of – leadership often seemed to be connected more to power, authority, final decision-making than it did to – sometimes even competency. And it feels like for sure competency has to be in the leadership mix. But I think this is where I always get conflicted, because I go, it feels like character needs to be in leadership as well. But then I go, is that me just thinking about what a Christian worldview looks like, so to speak? Or is that, am I trying to project? I don't know. I'm struggling to get this out. I think when I look at a business, I'm like, man, find the guy that's smartest, sharpest, can make something, build and make all the widgets you can make, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in the church, I think sometimes I look and I go, when our rhetoric is so much about we've got to grow more leaders, and maybe it's some of what you said a minute ago, is that really what we need? Do we need more leaders? It's kind of like what we talked about last week, even when we said, you know, we need more Charlies or we need more Jesuses. You know, sometimes I think there's this idolatry of, if we just get people to lead better, then everything else is going to work better. And it sounds really formulaic to me. And I think especially in the church, there's a whole lot more mystery to it, it feels like to me, than just, if I get these leaders trained, then everything's going to work better. Maybe not.
Right. What's driving this thought in your brain?
I think it's watching throughout my adult life the value of a pastor in a church when I was young was caring, shepherding, preaching, teaching, presence. I was very influenced by a guy named Eugene Peterson. He's the guy that did the translation of the Bible called The Message. That's mm-hmm. how most people know his name. But before he did The Message, he probably wrote 8 or 10 books, and most of them were on pastoral leadership. And he was just, you know, he was one of these guys who, you know, I bet he made gobs of money from The Message and had huge influence with a lot of people. But, you know, I think the largest church he ever pastored was like 300 people. And for him, he intentionally wanted that. He wanted to be among people. He had the vision that, you know, pastoral ministry equals shepherding, and that was quote unquote leadership. But leadership was the last word you probably ever hear come out of his mouth. You know, mm-hmm. it was more about pastoring, shepherding. I think in my lifetime, I've watched leadership become the most important thing to be a good pastor, to be a good shepherd. You know, is you got to be a great leader. And I don't know. I think I'm just curious about it as I get older. I don't know if I'm against it or for it, but.
When you think back, when you just said that, growing up, your pastor was you listed 4 things, I think. Is that a good memory?
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is.
See, here's where I would question that. I grew up in a similar type situation. I don't think you can be a shepherd.
Gotcha. Yeah. All things.
Pastor, teacher. I just don't think you can do all those things.
Yeah. Can't wear all those hats.
No CEO does of another company.
Right.
You're an Enneagram, whatever, 8 mm-hmm. as a CEO. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a driver, competent. You're going to hire mm-hmm. Your skill set's going to go that way.
Yeah.
If you become a pastor of a church, you're a fallible human with a personality.
Right.
And you're going to lean into your strengths and hopefully shore up your weaknesses, but it's not going to be any different. But I don't think you're going to find a guy that's a really good teacher that's also highly relational.
No, I get that. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think this is helpful for me, because I'm trying to figure out why I've been thinking about this so much last week.
I'm trying to get to what's behind all that, because it's a very specific question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the phrase that I've ruminated on for 20 years is, gosh, leadership's becoming an idol, especially
I would agree
church.
With that.
You know?
Yeah.
And that bothers me. And so I think it's like, you know, even at Willow, who, again, I have such respect for that church. And you know, when I was in Chicagoland, we'd go up there sometimes and just watch what they were doing. And there's so many people who I think came back to the church as a safe place because of the way they did church. And so I'm always going to be grateful for their story and of just their availability to people who are marginally churched or completely unchurched. They would go in and go, gosh, if this is what God's about, I'm interested. So, you know, I will always celebrate that. But, you know, I don't know when it was, 25, 30 years ago, they started, well, I think it was in the early 90s. Yeah, they started what they now call the Global Leadership Summit or something like that. And the whole thing is raising up better leaders. And for sure, there's a need for people to know how to lead better. Like, I would never disagree with that. But it feels like the only thing we talk about then is lead, 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 vision, 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 you know, direction, direction, direction. And I just think that's like a quarter of the pie of what I think ultimate leadership is about, that it's not just about vision and direction. I remember in a church I worked in, we talked about four kinds of leadership. We talked about it all the time. And we had one person that represented each of those. You know, we had a directional leader, we had a strategic leader, an operational leader, and a relational leader. And again, it's kind of what you were saying. Nobody can do all four of those things. Nobody can wear all four of those hats. So,
it's, man, the CFO, the COO, the CEO, and
I think the thing I've always been intrigued about is, what is it that created the priority that directional is more important than the other three? Why is that true? And should it be true?
Why is the CEO more important than the CFO?
Well, that'd be the question I would ask too. Why? I think I'm a communist, maybe. I don't know either. I think I'm just curious. Like, you know, we put a dollar amount value on those different quote unquote types of leadership. And therefore, and I think that maybe the church is different than the corporate world for me in some ways. I'm thinking about this, but I just think, what's the purpose and nature of the church, and how much vision and direction do we need some human to give us when Jesus kind of gave the direction and the vision for the church?
Well, that's a different discussion, I think.
To me, they all meld together, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a totally different discussion. I think we're way, well, boy, I'm gonna think before I say that. The second part of your question, I think, goes back to what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get back to the basics. Mm-hmm. You know, let's do some do good and share. Let's lead a simple life. How can I help today? So we've kind of lost track of, I think, in general,
yeah,
we've lost track of that. But I do think, you know, why, to go back to our earlier topic, why was Nick Saban a great coach?
Yeah.
I don't know all. I know two guys that played for him, and I know what they would say. I know other guys that know that program, and by observation, here's what I would say. He has the most capacity or the most number of hats to wear, however you say that. Let's do that in better English.
Yeah.
Sorry, Brooks. But he can wear more hats well than other people.
Yeah.
He's got more capacity.
Yeah.
He understands defense. He understands offense. He understands when he can't do something and when somebody else is better.
Mm-hmm.
His ego didn't get in the way a lot because he hired guys with big egos and he let them loose.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, what a coaching tree. Yeah.
I think a CEO is more important than a CFO.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that person, he or she, generally is in that position, not all the time, but generally is in that position because they have the biggest understanding and probably the most trust of the people mm-hmm. underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
Other, mm-hmm. you know, why can't an offensive coordinator be a great head coach? Well, they might be able to, but mm-hmm. generally, if you're a good offensive coordinator,
mm-hmm.
your brain works that way. Sequencing, mm-hmm. play calling, numbers, geometry, all the things that go into that. Feel.
Mm-hmm.
Your CFO, you think in terms of numbers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm an accountant. So an investment, you know, appreciation needs to be greater than the rate of inflation. Yeah, yeah, true. But, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of other things that go into that. You know, so I just don't think you get a lot of people that have wide skill sets.
Right, right. No, I don't know if I disagree with that. I mean, in some ways, you know, even in church world or in the biblical world, you know, in some ways what you're talking about giftedness, right? People have different gifts, and so you need to be in a place where you can maximize and use your gift. Generally, you're right. The CFO, their gift set probably isn't the same as a CEO. So I do understand that there's entirely different lane lines that people need to run in and mm-hmm. work in. So, yeah, I don't disagree with that. I appreciate the way you just said that with the football example. I don't know what my brain's been spinning on this, but there's something about
Something's going on. I'm not tracking all the way with it.
Yeah, yeah. There's just something about the way we worship leaders and leadership that's disturbing to me. You know, it feels like the Old Testament.
What's happened that makes you think we worship leaders or value them more than maybe we should?
What do you think is the number one thing that people use to choose to go to a type of church? Well, I think there's a lot of things. You know, there's a parking lot. There's things from the parking lot to kids ministries, how well my kids are taking care of,
parking
all
lot thing.
But at the end of the day, what you usually hear is you hear about
the pastor,
my leader, you know, the guy up front that's doing this. And I think, and I don't think that's wrong. I mean, I think you want to go to someplace where you enjoy and you grow from it. But then I don't know. I think of that old passage in the Old Testament. You know, when Israel wanted a king, God let them have a king, even though that really wasn't what was going to be best for them.
Right.
And so, you know, again, that's a leadership problem, is what that became.
Well, again, we've talked about this a lot. You, with a leader, they're not exempt from Genesis 3.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're going to get all the good and bad that goes with that leader.
Right. Right.
And the same thing, you know. Again, go back to the football analogy. A kid goes and plays for Alabama because they like the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they get there.
Mm-hmm. There's good, bad, and ugly with that.
100%.
Right. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, but I, yeah. And so it bothers you that people choose that because of the pastor or choose.
Thanks for saying that word. I don't know if it bothers me. I don't think I can articulate what I'm thinking today. There was something about looking back at the story of Willow Creek. I'm trying to go back to the basics of what got me this thing about leadership this morning. And so grateful for its influence, as I've already said. But then watching this movement that's happened and then seeing just how much we value leadership. And I wonder sometimes if, again, I'll get my word, if we've created this idolatry about leadership. I see it where we talk about it, whether it's in marriages, and you know, I sit in my office all the time. Well, I just need to know how to lead my wife and my family better. And I just think, gosh, I don't know that I love that phrase.
It's problematic.
Yeah. You know, even in Ephesians 5, you know, this passage where men are head. You know, there's two major schools of thought on it. You know, you and I both were raised in the school of thought where head means authority.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But there's a strong, compelling argument that head means source. And what that means is like the head of a river, it's a source. And that in many ways you think about it, the source of the church is Christ. It's his love that throws love to us. And it ties in really well with that 5:21 in Ephesians that says, you know, mutually submit to one another, you know?
Yeah.
And you see, you know, I think it's just like, I think my wiring is so much that headship, leadership looks more like servant's service than it does big authority. And I think just what I see so much is that leadership looks like commanding presence, authority. By God, it's my way. Follow me. We're going to do it this way.
Right.
And I think maybe that's kind of just what got worked up in me. And then how much we tend to love that even in the church these days, that it's the bigness of leadership instead of the humility of leadership. You know, again, it's that story of Jesus in John 13, that the greatest example of leadership, the biggest dog in the room was Jesus for sure. And yet all the guys come in and they're arguing about who's going to be greatest in the kingdom, who's going to be the next great leader. I mean, that's the argument that's going on.
Who's going to follow him?
Yeah. And then Jesus, arguably, the rabbi, the teacher of all of them, picks up the basin and the towel and he washes their feet. And, you know, we talk about that down being one of the greatest acts of leadership. Okay, well, that's so connected. It's a one-to-one correlation with service. And it feels like that sometimes the mantra or the drumbeat of leadership is the higher I can get up in my ivory tower, the further away I can get from everybody. And I'm not saying to be your friends that everybody needs to know their pastor. I think that's impossible mathematically. But there is something about the word service with leadership that I think maybe that's what's got, or servant. Maybe that's what's got me on this.
One question I would think, I had two thoughts on that. One question is, well, what does service look like if you're the pastor of a mega church or the leader of a corporation?
Yeah. Looks very different than it does if you're doing something else, right?
Unless you got a little family business of 10 people. Okay. That's a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
The second thing is, I think there's something in, you know, you think back on history, human history, and we, as a general rule, we like to follow leaders.
Yeah. I agree with that.
There's something about, I think, in the fall where order became chaos.
Mm.
You know, in the creation, if you believe the creation story, and I do, then God took chaos and he made order.
Mm-hmm.
And the fall took order and made chaos.
Right.
I think there's a part of our soul that does not like chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we see a leader or a person, good or bad, all you got to do is look at history. We followed some idiots.
Right.
As a human race.
Right, absolutely.
And some great people.
Yeah.
We so want to follow them, I think in large part because it alleviates our fear and brings some order to our chaos.
Gosh, that's a great word.
Mm-hmm. We lose our ability to think critically. We just put on the hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when I go to a church now at 58, I see the leader, and I've been a part of a startup, and I'm friends with pastors, and I kind of know what's going on in his life a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a huge struggle. It's a huge burden.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really shitty job in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to do 7 out of 10 things really great.
Yeah.
A couple of them not so great, and one of them really terribly.
Yeah.
Because he's a leader, and that's what the CEO of Amazon would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so in that way, it's no different. There's a different calling, but expectations, I think, are expectations for that role are unrealistic overall, in my opinion.
Yes. Well, that's true. Corporately or church world, isn't it?
Oh, particularly church world.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just an unbelievably.
Yeah.
Unrealistic expectation from most
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Born out of our own. Again, man, I think a lot of it is what you said it last week. Fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just, I've had this thought for a long time. I just think we flock to order.
Yeah. That's a great phrase. Yeah. And so the people that can bring order are who we want to be our leaders.
Yeah. And we stop questioning them.
Mm-hmm.
And we
maybe
stop,
that's the danger that
we
I'm
stop
thinking about.
Thinking,
mm-hmm.
and we just go,
mm-hmm.
you know, we take things at face value. Yeah. I'm going to send the National Guard to Chicago,
yeah,
to clean up crime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the surface, it seems, man,
yeah.
who can't get behind that? We want less crime,
right?
A lot of golf between here and the hole on that. You know what I mean?
No, there is a lot
it's
of different
not
worldviews.
That simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily disagree with the thought, but that problem didn't happen overnight, mm-hmm. and it's not going to go away with some weekend warriors overnight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No offense to the National Guard. I'm grateful for them.
Right.
But they are, that's not what they do on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And that problem didn't start yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's just one example. There could be an out, and that's on the one side of the proverbial aisle. There could be, there's examples
sure.
on the other side.
Absolutely.
So, but not advocating a solution, but hey, let's just take a step back and think about that for a second,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm going to let my brain keep clicking. We may come back to this sometime. There's something still going on with me about
something leadership. Triggered you there.
Yeah,
a
I don't know what it is. And I'm you know, again, because I think so many men and women that I know who are in big leadership roles, and I respect them. One of my greatest joys is supporting them and come alongside them, being a safe place for them to process. So I'm not anti leadership. I don't want that to be heard, but I do think there's something about the way we have this idol or worship of leadership that it feels like it's the most important thing. And sometimes I wonder if we're missing some of the most basic things that, you know, and I'll go back to really what you said last week from Hebrews, or is that Romans?
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Do good and share, you know, that doesn't sound very CEO like, and
right.
yet when it is, it's amazing what happens with that.
Well, I think when you look at companies that are successful, they're probably not too different in some ways from the biblical model. Their leaders understand the value of the people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you mm-hmm. know, what's the guy, the Southwest Airlines CEO?
Yeah. Drawing a blank.
Yeah.
Nuts is the book he wrote. Yeah.
Keller.
Is that yeah. Herb.
Herb Keller?
I think so.
Yeah, and so, you know, he was one of the, I don't know if he was one of the first, but I guess he was one of the first that I remember hearing about. Is, hey, the client is not the most important person.
Yeah. My that was
people,
weird.
My people are the most important people. Yeah. I thought, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
If they're happy, though.
Yeah.
And so back in the day, and still to this day, you know, you don't see a ton of it, but there was a marked difference in the vibe on a Southwest flight versus a Delta flight.
Mm-hmm.
And the Southwest, it was more fun. They were energetic.
Yep.
They're still kind of funny. You know, it was just and it's probably not the case anymore, you know, as much as it was maybe years ago. But the theory was, hey, if my employees are happy,
yeah,
that's going to take care of the client part.
Yep. Yeah, that's good. That's good. It was assigned seats coming, I think, in January on Southwest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Have you seen that?
No.
They finally are doing it. Yeah. So there'll be a legacy airline soon.
I hate that.
Yeah. You want to go try Spirit?
No.
Have you ever flown Spirit?
Probably.
Yeah.
I've flown some things that I thought, boy, this is really maybe not the best choice.
Especially overseas, but that's a whole nother conversation. Yeah. Anyway, well, from skillets to Saturday Night Live to church to leadership. Oh, a little college football preview of the Tennessee-Arkansas game. Another conversation that bounced all around.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to Saturday Night Live, and I guess happy birthday to Willow Creek. 50 years old.
I'd be interested to see what you figure out about what sparked this. That was something I think very specific.
Yeah, I need to think back to what all I read, what all I saw this weekend, because there's something that I realized that, like, on the inside, there's a part of me I'm feeling angry about something with leadership, and yet I really appreciate people who lead well. So I'll just keep chewing cud on, as the old cows do.
I think the anger is overriding the appreciation, though.
It may be today. Yeah, it may be. Yeah. I am thinking about it. It's interesting when you said that. I am thinking about a video I saw over as I was kind of in the rabbit hole thinking about these things. And there's something about, I don't know. I don't want to open that can of worms. But yeah, I need to think about it. I will.
What video?
We'll talk about that some other day.
Okay. Are you not going? Okay.
Yeah. I just need to hold it right here in process, I think.
All right. So you're winding this one down.
I'm winding this one down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like an end point. You like order.
I do. Yeah. I'm a leader.
You're the leader of this podcast.
That's sad. We're in trouble then. Anyway, well, good to be with you.
Yep.
All right.